Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, April 14th, 2022. As always, we are grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself as a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And by the time you're done, or in the middle of typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one that have been curated out of the last 11-plus years of our doing the Internet show. Some of them have people actually being stepped through the worksheet process. Some of them have people asking clarifying questions, and it's a wonderful resource. If you can't join the show live and or if you choose not to ask for help specifically on a particular worksheet, you can listen to those shows numerous times, and they serve as a tutorial for how to use this tool to great effect in your life. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, because it frequently leads to comments, answers, testimonials, questions, and if you have any of those to share with us, please do so. Call the number at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. That will let me know that you have a comment or a question, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. We also have another service we offer is support groups, and this is a Thursday. So there will be yet another Thursday support group offered this evening. All the information you would need to know to join us for that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And we welcome you or anybody that you would like to refer to us to participate in the support groups on Tuesday and Thursday night. They run from 6:30 p.m. Central Time until 9 p.m. Central. And what else? And today, later today, there's going to be a Zoom meeting of a support group or of a book club that Michael and Jeannie will participate in, or Michael will participate in. And apparently there's a woman somewhere else on some other continent who is running a book club and has been for quite a while and has, you know, many, many people on the list, over 1,000 people on the club, and anywhere from 10 to 100 people will tune in. And I'm scrolling through the email. So the Zoom meeting today, April 14th, is at 8:30 p.m. London time, which I believe is 3:30 Central time, or maybe 3:30 Eastern time. And, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time today. And I'm certain that you can find that on whyagain.org if you search for the Global Online Book Club. And you can find the link for that to join that meeting absolutely free. So we continue to present information and make ourselves available to help people understand how to use these tools with the full-time intention of being of service. And you can let us know how we can be of service either by calling the number that I mentioned, 563-999-3581, or sending an email to tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or send an email to Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And I think that's all the housekeeping for today. We were working through the Way of Mastery, and yesterday we did We continued to read and review Lesson 8. And Lesson 8 in the Way of Mastery, to my eye and my ear, is a process for getting more specific, getting more committed to, getting more vigilant about how I choose to pour energy into certain thought patterns. In the middle of page 95 on the Way of Mastery, it says, you only experience what you have chosen to create. And you are connected to all of creation. This is what we were reading. You are a web of energy within webs of energy within webs of energy. And because you're connected constantly to all creation, it's certainly not a conscious thing, but we live and move and have our being within energy systems that are within energy systems that are within energy systems. And we were just reading about how you can be walking along on a sunny day and all of a sudden a random thought comes into your mind and you wonder, where did that come from? You think of someone from your childhood, or you think of something loving, or you think of something violent, or you think of something bizarre that's never crossed your mind before. And the reason that can happen is because you are in constant connection with the one mind. And this book says over and over again, all minds are joined. And because you live in that perfect communion with all of creation, and you are like a grand field of energy in which all webs of relationship are reverberating constantly, because of that, you actually have access to the complete entirety of creation. And this entirety of creation is not limited to what is occurring now, as you consider time, you have available to yourself everything which you would call the past and the future. States this very clearly and directly at the bottom of page 96, in that last paragraph on 96. You are in perfect connected communion with all of creation. It's a field of energy within a field of energy within a field of energy, and you're just a nested, what you consider your body is just a field of energy that's connected to all other energies. And it's a grand field of energy in which all webs of relationship are reverberating constantly. As such, it says, you actually have access to the complete entirety of creation. Now, that doesn't exist within your conscious awareness, and yet it exists within awareness itself, and you are a spark of that awareness. You are connected to that one mind, to the Christ mind, to the great consciousness, the only mind there is. And this entirety of creation is not limited to what's occurring right now, as you would call time, this moment. That connection you have is to all of creation. And so you have available to yourself everything which you would call the past and the future. These things are available to you at all times. There is not one of you who has not experienced this for yourself. At times when perhaps you suddenly thought of a friend that maybe you hadn't seen in years or decades, and then all of a sudden the telephone rings, and even before you answer it, you know, you have this premonition. You know it's that friend. Now, this doesn't make any sense in your causal third-dimensional plane, because if you are just a physical body, and they are just a physical body, and you're separated by 1 or 2 or 5 or 10,000 miles, and you haven't had physical connection with them for years or decades, it makes no sense that you would think of them and then the phone would ring and it would be them. But even though your conscious mind has been busy making breakfast or wondering about which stocks to buy or sell or which perfume to put on the body, that conscious logical mind that Michael Rice is so fond of telling us maybe can control or be aware of 9 bits of data at any given moment out of a period of time, in a period of time where 10,000 brain cells are firing in your brain. And, you know, the way I like to say it is they're estimating, the estimates keep going up, but in that same period of time, 1/25th of a second, there are probably over 20 trillion bits of information hitting your senses. And we like to remind people that our senses only register a tiny bit of what's actually happening in the universe, in the world around us. I was listening to a book earlier this morning, and they were talking about how the research indicates that if we are not engaged with someone else, if we're only in our own mind thinking, we've got about a 7-second window of conscious awareness before some unconscious pattern kicks in again and we are living from habit. And the only way to extend that window is to engage in a conversation with somebody else, which is why so many of the great philosophical books are written in a dialogue format. Because if I'm imagining having a conversation with somebody else, I can extend that window of focused, conscious awareness. And if it's just me in my own thought, in my own mind, walking in a forest preserve, within about a 7-second window, I flip over into some automatic thought or some habitual thought, or some habitual action. So while my 9-bit mind, while that 7-second window is consciously focused on something like making breakfast or wondering about which stocks to buy or sell or which perfume to put on the body, I remain in perfect communion with all of creation. My conscious logical mind is not aware of it, and yet that doesn't change the fact of it. Just like as I'm walking around or if I'm sitting or taking a nap, I'm not thinking consciously about the effect of gravity, and yet the effect of gravity is still there. The text goes on to say, this is why when there is a deep resonance between friends, even if they're separated by thousands of miles, all of a sudden you know when they need to call you, when you need to call them. They need you to call them, and vice versa. And you feel a sense of concern. Maybe they just stubbed their toe, but you pick up that vibration. You all live with this. You all know this. There is no secret about it. What I would seek then to attract your attention to in this moment is one of the pebbles that's been dropped into the field of your awareness. That pebble, that thought, that belief is generally true for everyone involved in the third dimensional experience that we called physicality. So everybody's walking around in a body has been introduced to and bought into and been programmed to believe one thought. That thought is, it is not possible for me to have complete mastery over which pebbles are dropped into my awareness, which thoughts come into my mind, for I am at the mercy of a vibrational field that's been set up by all the ripples of all the thoughts and webs of relationship that I swim in constantly. I'm just a product of my generation. I'm a product of the culture. I'm a product of my parents and the cross-generational family patterns. That's it. And I'm powerless and I'm a victim. Almost everybody walking around in a physical body has been programmed to believe that. And what this lesson is calling us to is this image of a still clear pool of water where nothing is disturbing the surface, so it's like a glass tabletop, and every thought we choose to focus on is like throwing a pebble into that pool, and it causes ripples. In our mind, when I choose a thought like, oh, God, this is going to be a bad day, oh, it's starting bad already, that thought and the emotional energy I put into it determines how big, how strong the amplitude of that wave is, how big that wave is going to be as it ripples out from me. The emotional energy I pour into it, the mind energy that I pour into it, the value that I give that thought is going to determine its size, its shape, its strength, and the power of its energy as it ripples out from me and as it comes back to me. So they're saying that practically everybody who's walking around in a physical body has a very strong, very large pebble dropped from a very high height into this pool, and it's caused this enormous splash and wave and ripples that is a contributing energy to how they perceive the world. And that thought is that it is not possible for me to have complete mastery over which pebbles, which thoughts are dropped into my awareness. And the reason for that is because I am at the mercy of, I am a victim of the vibrational field that has been set up by all of the thoughts and all of the power of the energy and all of the ripples that move out from all of the energies, from the events and the thoughts and the beliefs that have come before me that form the webs of relationships that are this world that I move around in, that I swim in constantly. And this book is here to tell us that because we are creators of our own experience, that perception is absolutely true, as long as we choose to believe it's true. It will create our experience of life as long as we believe it's true, as long as we cherish it, as long as we pour our energy into it, as long as we are convinced of its validity. And then it says in the next sentence, that perception or belief is also absolutely laughable, and it's powerless to affect me or you as soon as you choose to acknowledge that this is so. Everything is energy. My thoughts are an energy. My mind energy is under my control insofar as I can choose where it gets directed. I can choose again. That's Diedrich Wolsack's work. I can cancel everything I think I want. I can open a curtain in my practice, cancel everything I think I want. My trifling treasures put away. This is the Course in Miracles practice of this. You have this ability, even if you have not been introduced to it prior to this work. This remains true about you as a human being. And as soon as you recognize that you have the ability to change your experience of life by choosing a different focus of your conscious awareness, then this thought that you're a victim of what's come before and what's moving around you is completely powerless, and it's laughable. So what's the point of all this? The point of all this is simply this. If you would choose to awaken completely, it's your choice. You can stay sleeping and you can slumber in your suffering, or you can choose to awaken. But if you would choose to not just be a wave that's mysteriously arisen from the ocean, if you would choose to be more than just another soul that has arisen from the mind of God and is somehow just crashing about through the universe, if you would choose that, it is absolutely necessary for you to own as your own every thought, every energy that you value, every pebble that drops into the still clear pool of your awareness, and to own it with this kind of a thought. I am the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all neutral relationships or experiences. I alone place the value upon objects, things, thoughts, and belief systems. I alone am the literal creator of my moment-to-moment experience. Now, here are four statements at the bottom of page 97. Four statements that it's saying, if you would choose to awaken, it is absolutely necessary to understand the truth of these, to keep this truth conscious and active in your mind. This is part of that total, perfect, conscious, active, present love that Dr. Michael Rice talks about. Awareness of the truth of life. I am the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all neutral relationships or experiences. Coming up in the next lesson, the title of the lesson is All Events Are Neutral. So when I say I alone interpret all neutral relationships, I could say I choose to interpret everything, because everything is a neutral relationship. Everything is a neutral experience. All events are neutral. My thoughts about them are not neutral. My thoughts about them create my experience of them. The third statement that it says is absolutely necessary to own if I choose to awaken. I don't have to awaken. I can slumber in my suffering. But if I choose to awaken, here's the pathway. I need to know I'm the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all neutral relationships and experiences. I alone place value upon the objects, the things, the thoughts, and belief systems that I encounter. And I alone am the literal creator of my moment-to-moment experience. I don't know about you, but for me to make that real in my life, I have to commit to being vigilant and practice that. I have to find ways to catch the programming in my mind, which runs so powerfully and automatically, that says, this is bad, this is wrong, I'm a victim, he or she shouldn't be doing that. And I need to replace it with this set of observations. And once I've done that, I awaken in the moment and I can evaluate, do I like what I've created? Would I prefer something else? Perhaps I'll choose to choose again in this moment. The text goes on to say at the bottom of page 97, this, as you can see, changes everything. Never again can you allow yourself to feel as though you are merely a victim of unconscious forces. Never again can you look out beyond yourself and find fault with another. Never again can the energy of blame be projected from you to be dumped upon another. Never again can the energy of judgment hold sway in your holy mind. Now, judgments can arise, and you can recognize them as a contraction away from the flow of life and release them. But it's like it was talking about earlier in Lesson 7, it said, if you awaken to the truth of this, you'll never again fear fear. It doesn't say you'll never have fear. It says you won't value it, you won't fight against it, you won't give it credit or credence or credibility in your mind. And here it says the same kind of thing. Once you acknowledge these four statements, the last one is, I alone am the literal creator of my moment-to-moment experience. Once that happens, never again will the energy of blame be projected from you to be dumped on another. Never again can the energy of judgment hold sway in your mind. In other words, be seen by you as having such value that you use the judgment to continually create the image of separation, the dream of separation. The text goes on and says, this thought, this one singular thought, or this one singular pebble dropped into the still pool of your awareness, this one thought is absolutely essential if you would decide to awaken wholly, totally, completely. And that is what this lesson is all about. That, right there, how can you awaken if you choose to? How can you awaken completely and totally? Here's what's essential. Absolutely necessary, according to this teaching, that you allow these four statements to be observed by you, practiced by you, brought back into awareness by you, by your own choice, every moment where you recognize tightness or tension or judgment or discomfort emotionally. You could choose to use those negative emotional experiences, those negative physical experiences as the wake-up call, as the alarm system, as the compass to guide you. And you can replace them with thoughts like, I am the one who chooses what I'm experiencing in this moment. I alone choose interpretations, and every event and experience is neutral until I choose to interpret it. I alone place value upon the objects, things, thoughts, and belief systems. I alone am the creator of my moment-to-moment experience. That is what this lesson is all about. It brings to mind the story of the three umpires, after a day of a busy Saturday when they're out, you know, doing their umpire thing at various baseball games, and they're at a bar together talking, and the one guy says, you know, here's the truth of life. There's only balls and strikes, and I call them as I see them. The second one says, well, there's only balls and strikes, and I call them as they are. And the third umpire says, well, in my view, there's only pitches until I call them. Everything is neutral. Everything is just a ball flying through the air until I label it on target or off target, good or bad. It's the same wisdom that's contained in this book. All events are neutral until a human mind comes in and labels it one thing or another. This is how we have, you know, in our language, it's we're so deep in the layers of conditioning that we don't even understand. We have phrases in our culture like natural disasters. Just think about that. A natural disaster. The movement of the wind is a disaster. The amount of rain that falls from the sky is a disaster. An earthquake that shakes the land, that's a disaster. Just stop and think about how none of that, before humans were here to create a label for it and judge it as one thing or another, it didn't have a label. It was just the flow of life. Now, it does create an impact, and yet the impact has no label until a human mind comes along and labels it good, bad, right, wrong, up, down. Life is a flow of energy. We are part of that flow of energy. We have access to the mind energy that is a creative force. We are called in this kind of work to wake up and pay attention to our contribution, to what we have control over, which is where do we point that creative force that we call mind energy? Which thoughts do we choose and then choose to value? Because that is the only thing that creates our experience of life. The next heading on top of page 98 says, you are not a victim of the world you see. Though you would hear the word, and that which carries the vibration of truth, though you hear this many times, you can deny it as many times as it's heard. You can choose to not allow it to settle deep into the pool of your awareness. You can choose to value other thoughts about how you were a victim, how this really is a tragedy, how this never should have happened, and that person never should have done that. You can choose to have those thoughts and to place value on them. And as you do, that will create your experience of life. You can choose to not allow this thought to settle deep within your mind. You are not a victim of the world you see. As you choose, you create the effects. You can hold on to the hope that you are still a victim of the world that you see, that events hold some value in themselves that do not come from what you place value upon them. And as long as you choose to deny the world, you cannot be set free. You cannot free yourself as long as you believe you're a victim. The next paragraph reads, for the mind that chooses in even a small part to perceive itself as a victim of this world and of its world of experience, that mind remains powerless. And the odd part about it is you're using the very power of creation the very same power that anybody else uses to understand their freedom to create, you're using that very power to create the belief that you're powerless. And that can't be taken from you. So as long as you choose to believe that you're powerless, you create the experience that you're powerless. For the mind that chooses in even a small part to perceive itself as a victim of its world of experience, that mind remains powerless. It remains in a state that generates frustration, weakness, fear, self-doubt, unworthiness, suffering, pain, emotional pain of aloneness or separation from others, and lack of fulfillment. Ultimately, it generates the echo of the belief that you have been squeezed so tightly by fear that you're literally separated from the ocean of the mind of God, of the mind of the Creator, of all of creation itself. The next paragraph reassures us that awareness is all that you have and all that you are. Out of your use of that awareness, that infinite power, out of that comes all that you choose to experience, and out of that comes your decision of how you will experience what you have called to yourself. In truth, here comes the truth. Please listen well. It says, no experience you have ever had has defined you or identified you. No experience you have ever had has defined you or identified you. No experience that you've ever chosen to create or to call to yourself and then to value as you valued it, none of that has ever made you higher than or less than anyone else. Not even me, not even Yeshua, not even the Creator, not even the Holy Spirit, not even the Great Comforter. You're connected to and of equal value with every other entity, every other consciousness, every other being. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, this is wisdom that goes beyond just, you know, deep spiritual teachings. That's from the Rudyard Kipling poem, If. This is philosophical truth. This is observation. Nothing you experience or chosen to create as an experience and call to yourself and then to value as you valued it, none of that has ever made you higher than or less than anyone, not even me, not even Yeshua, not even your favorite teacher or guru, priest or rabbi. Although there have been many who still need to believe that Yeshua is far beyond them, no experience they have ever had, no experience you have ever had, has proven your unworthiness to be supported, to be loved by your Creator, to be part of the flow of creation, infinitely connected to the flow of creation. Therefore, you remain as you were created to be. You are a wave filled with the very self-same power as the ocean itself, a wave, a soul, a web of relationship, arising from the holy mind of the Creator with the momentum to flow on forever, with the freedom to create by deciding which vibrations you will allow to settle in and become a part of you, and which thoughts you will defend, which perceptions you will cleave unto. I think I was saying it just yesterday that Guy Finley has a talk where he says, you're not going to like hearing this, but you only do what you value. So when you get angry, it's because in that moment you value your anger above everything else. When you get sad, it's because in that moment you're valuing your sadness. You only do what you choose to do. You only experience based on the thoughts and beliefs that you hold onto and give value to. You are then, it says, eternally creating and eternally a creator. And this is the one thing you have no free will about. You can never decide to be a non-participant in the very mystery of creation's extension. When you hold the thought, quote, I refuse to participate in God's creation, close quotes, then you will use the power of creation to create the perception that you're separate, when in truth, you can never be separate. But you will create the experience of yourself as being outside or separate from creation itself. And that is the root of most of our emotional and psychological pain. You have created the insane emotion of trying to separate the wave from the ocean itself. And you will create that perception of separation. You will create that hallucination. Even though you cannot separate yourself from life, from the flow of creative energy, from the one mind that you're a part of, nothing outside of you, the truth of your being, is not affected. Your experience is affected, but the truth of your being is not affected. The truth of your being cannot be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way based on actions you've taken or thoughts you give value to or actions you refuse to take or other people's thoughts about you, because you remain as you were created to be. Why is this important? Because, you see, the process of healing is not difficult. This is at the top of page 99. It requires only your willingness to accept that you are the effect of the Creator's desire to create like unto itself. Just as a wave is the effect of the ocean's desire to express itself in a new way, a new form, and to bring a uniqueness to every wave that arises from its mysterious depths. Again, you may not have been taught this from your birth and from your schooling and from your family of origin, but you are a part of the flow of creation. You are the effect of the creative energy expressing in form. You have dominion over where you point your mind energy, your thoughts, and that creates your experience of life and nothing else. The next paragraph says, surrender is the process in which you finally relent. You give up resisting the fact of your very existence. You stop whining about it. You stop lamenting it. You stop worrying about it. Instead, you make a decision to get on with being alive. And what is alive about you is going to be alive forever. There's no place to hide and nowhere to go. You are not just a body. You are the consciousness within which the body arises. The next section is titled, Creating as Christ. So here's a suggestion. Drop this thought into your mind. Drop this little pebble. I am not a victim of the world I see. I am a ceaseless creator made out of and of one substance with my creator itself. Practice that. Make that a part of your meditation. Make that a part of your mantra. With the four statements that were on the previous, you know, two pages back on page 97. I am the one who chooses the effects I experience. I alone interpret all relationships. They are neutral until I interpret them. I alone place value on the objects, things, thoughts, and belief systems that I encounter. I alone am the literal creator of my moment-to-moment experience. Make that a mantra. Meditate on that daily. Watch what changes in your life. Here's another shorter version. I am not a victim of the world I see. I am a ceaseless creator, made out of and of one substance with my creator itself. The text goes on and says, then indeed, the questions begin to take a different shape. and you begin to use the power of your awareness to deliberately and selectively choose which vibrations, which webs of relationship, which ones you're going to pull into your field of awareness and which ones you're going to resonate with and which ones you're going to let just dissolve from your mind and from your awareness. They're there. You see them and you say, oh, there's that. I've seen that before. I don't really like what happens when I pour my mind energy into it, so I'm going to let that one go. I'm just going to release it. Breathe, soften. Just breathe and soften and let that go. If you have held on to a thought of being small, a thought of lack, a thought of powerlessness, now you begin to see that it is perfectly neutral. It's perfectly safe to look upon everything you have ever created and drawn to yourself and experienced in any way and say, well, that's been my life. That's interesting. That's very good. And if I don't like it, if I don't prefer to continue it, then I'm done with it. I move on. I release it. I let it go. I ask, well, what's next? What pebbles can I drop into my holy mind in this next moment? Can I look upon the current experience I'm having and see that it's nothing but the effect, the ripple of a pebble that maybe a thought that I had dropped into my mind so long ago that I don't even remember it? Can I look upon these events unfolding around me as completely neutral? And the text says, and if they're unfolding around you, they're in your body, trust me, that's still around you, for you are much, much more than just your body. The text reads, can I begin now, in this present moment? Am I willing now to choose a different thought, to drop a different pebble into the still and infinite clarity of the pool of my awareness? Because this infinite clarity of the pool of my awareness, this is what is alive about me always. So can I choose to use it differently? Do I dare think a different kind of thought, a more loving kind of thought, a more inclusive, a more expansive, a more gratitude-based thought? Dare I drop such a pebble into my consciousness? So what kinds of thoughts might they be? What kind of pebbles might we choose to change our experience of life fairly radically? How about a thought like, well, I think I'll become a world savior, a Christ. What would that be like? What would it be like to just be consciously connected to the source of creation and then extend that lovingly in every moment? Well, in order for that to happen, what vibrations would I need to let go of my life, and which ones would I need to open up to? What would that feel like? What would I see if I looked out through the field of my awareness at the flow of life in creation? You know, I ran into this a few years ago. When I was in college, I had a few people that were doing spiritual growth work and things, and they recommended this book, The Autobiography of a Yogi. Now, I had been raised Catholic, kindergarten, grade school, high school, and at the time I was attending a Catholic college. And somebody in that Catholic college was touting this book, The Autobiography of a Yogi. Paramahansa Yogananda was the author. And I took a look at that book and dropped it like it was poison, like it was a hot potato burning my hands. This was so far, not just out of alignment with, but directly against so many of the teachings that I'd been conditioned to in the Catholic faith from kindergarten, grade school, high school, and college, that I literally ran from that book. And I reevaluated my thoughts about and appreciation for the intelligence of the people who said they liked it. It was like a poison. it couldn't be right because it was so far against what I'd been taught from the time I had been introduced to language in my life. And then a number of years ago, I was doing what I'm doing now, and somebody said, hey, here's this guy, Michael Singer, and he's written this book, The Untethered Soul. And then he wrote this other book. Years after that, he wrote the book, The Surrender Experiment, Saying Yes to Things. And I read those two books, and they were just lovely, wonderful, great ideas in resonance with a lot of other things I'd been studying and doing. And one of the themes that kept coming up in that book is Michael Singer kept referring to this book that influenced him so powerfully. And that book was this Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. So I thought, well, I don't know. I'm a lot of years older than I was in college. Maybe I should take a look at that book. So I got that book and I started reading it. Oh, man, it was great. Just so lovely. The whole first third of the book. And then I found myself one day reading that book and feeling sick to my stomach and like I want to throw this book across the room. And because I've been in this work and because I understand I'm the one that's creating that thought and that physical experience of almost being sick to my stomach, I put the book down gently. I did some tapping and breathing. I did some worksheets on it. I asked to be shown what the hidden part of my mind was. And I started flashing on all of these things from my conditioning, from my Catholicism, and how, you know, Yeshua's the only one that could do this stuff, and here's this book talking about other people doing things that you might call miraculous and having experiences that can't be explained. And I just had to look at, here's this paragraph on the top of page 100. It says, what vibrations would I need to let go of in my life? And which thoughts and vibrations would I need to open up to? And I was reading that book by Paramahansa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi, and I got introduced to some things that I really had to let go of. Because if I held on to those beliefs, if I held on to the judgments and the fear that it was generating, I wouldn't have been able to finish reading that book. And I would have continued to generate that nauseous feeling in the pit of my stomach. We're being asked to observe differently, to question, to step into the direct observation that we are creating our life experience and nothing outside of us has ever done that. We're being asked to open up to the awareness that we are creators, that we are given dominion over a piece of creation which is driven through our mind energy and the choice of our thoughts. So what pebbles might I choose? Dare I drop such a pebble into my consciousness that I could be a spark of the divine mind, that I could learn to birth a piece of the Christ mind through my awareness? What might I have to let go of? What might I have to open up to in order to let myself have that experience? The next paragraph reads, I think I'll allow myself to be able to communicate with any web of relationship, any soul, any being, any soul or being that exists on any plane of creation. Why, perhaps I'll even allow myself to know that I can communicate with Yeshua. Well, or maybe I'll think about how wealthy I can become in this third dimensional reality. Maybe I'll think about how many golden coins I can allow myself to create in order to give them away to others. Maybe I'll focus on how many different places I can travel to on this planet in the span of one short physical life. Maybe I'll think about how many things that I could do to put myself in a position where I could say, I love you to more and more people. How big can I make my heart be? How deeply can I experience compassion, joy, peace, and bliss. It goes on to say, the realm of possibilities is as infinite as you are. The ones you select and choose are the ones that you will use to create the web of relationships that you will call your life. You'll call it your experience, even right down to the quality of how you will experience the transition that's mistakenly called death in your world. Would you call it death when you leave one room in your house and close that door and walk into another room? Of course not. You just say, I was there, and now I'm here. Well, this book is calling us to wake up to the fact that that's all that truly occurs when the molecules you've called to yourself to form your body become unhinged because you release your value of them. And they return to their constituents, their parts. They dissolve back into the dust or the energy field of the planet. And you merely leave one room and step into another. What I call you to in this lesson is this: to be willing to allow the pebble to be dropped into your field or your pool of awareness that carries the energy of this thought. And you can formulate it in any way you want. The essence of it is, quote, from this moment forward, I elect to birth a Christ and thereby learn what the Christ mind is. Once you do that, your experience becomes the unfolding learning of what Christ is. When that learning completes itself, you will discover that what you have learned is what you are created to be, and you have returned full circle. The prodigal son or daughter, journeying through the field of all possibilities, has returned as the awakened Christ and has taken up his or her rightful place at the right hand of the Creator. What does all that symbolism mean? It just means that you finally think only with your right-mindedness. You think as the Creator thinks, and the Creator thinks lovingly. The Creator thinks infinitely, timelessly, patiently, certainly, and above all, the Creator thinks playfully, full of play. That's quite an invitation, and that's what this book is calling us to wake up to our role as creators and to wake up to the fact that we were created by an energy that is constantly extending, expanding, creating, and it's doing so playfully. And that is your birthright now and now and forever. And what might you have to open up to, and what might you have to let go of in order to step into that experience and make it your own? I realize that we've gone right up to the edge of time for our first hour, so I will remind us all that we come from love, we're made of this stuff we call love, we actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will say hello to Jeannie Rice and turn on her microphone. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Blessings. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Thursday, and it's April the 14th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And at 3:30 today, we will be doing the Global Book Club. And so all that information is on the website. You can either go to events or you can click on schedule, either one, and you'll see Global Online Book Club. And I'll also put it in the notes for today, but you can go there and find the link to join us live by Zoom. And then you also, if you scroll down, I've put the recordings for March the 24th and March 31st. And the book club is actually, you know, they're reading the Why Is This Happening to Me Again, but they say even if you've never read the book, join them in the club. It's actually like a live workshop. And Michael will be joining it today. And then after today, it will be the second and the fourth Thursday of each month until we get complete. Who knows how long that'll be. And so we'd love to have you join us there. There's people from all over the world. It's a fabulous group of people. We break off into small groups for just a couple of minutes, but the rest of the time we're all together. And connecting with other people is just fabulous, and they're really interested in this work and learning the Aramaic forgiveness. So join us on that, and I'm going to welcome Michael. Oh, and I did send out
a
newsletter today, so check your emails.
Check your email. Okay. I'll check my email. Welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. Delighted we get to move the conversation forward one more notch on the ladder. And if we have no hands up, Gene, do we have anybody out there in the film queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet, so go for it.
Okay. Well, we've been sort of sewing in over the last few weeks. I've actually been – one of the things I did when I got involved, you've heard us talk about the Avicen, is that it kind of inspired me. It's a medical device, and it inspired me to go back to med school. This goes back last June. I actually went out and bought a course because microcirculation wasn't much of a topic back when I was in school. It wasn't much known about it. They talked about arteries and veins, but no, there wasn't much known about microcirculation. And when we experienced the power of the changes it made in Jeannie's dad, you know, he had diabetic neuropathy, and he was at the point where we, you know, in the mornings when we got up, we would play dominoes. We'd have breakfast and play dominoes with him, and he'd sit for maybe a max of 45 or 50 minutes, and because of the pain in his feet and his legs, he'd have to get up and walk around for a little while before we could continue. Within a matter of a couple of weeks of him using the Avicen, we'd sit for 2.5 hours, and I'd say, Dad, how are your feet and legs? Oh, nothing. I didn't even notice anything. You know, but I saw those kinds of things, the experiences I had with it. I became more engaged and more involved, and so we actually distributed this machine. And the company asked me a few weeks ago if I would do a training call on the Avicen as it relates to sympathetic and parasympathetic dominance, which, you know, I've mentioned from time to time, but never really sewed it together in a way that, you know, fits and makes sense. And I've had some people asking questions both about the Avicen and this whole sympathetic, parasympathetic dominant system. And so I'm going to cover a little bit of material in that regard and just see where it leads, see what questions it takes us to and where we go. So there's the autonomic nervous system, autonomic, simply meaning it works automatically. You don't have a choice over it. It just functions. You can go into some functions in it with some effort, but generally speaking, it operates totally and completely on its own. And so that system is a continuum. There aren't two different systems. There's not a sympathetic and a parasympathetic, but the two systems are one. They are linked. And it's kind of like a slider. If you've got a stereo system, it has a slider. If you put it over to the left, the sound is off. If you put it over to the right, then the sound is up loud. And so I kind of visualize it as that sort of a thing happening. And when you realize that, then being aware of what state you're in is pretty important. And if you're in that sympathetic dominant state, basically it's a state of alert. It's where you're in fight, flight, fright, or fear, or freeze. And when one is in that state, which is great, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it, you know, sends blood to the larger muscles so you can run or fight. It changes the heart rate. It changes the breathing rate. Does all kinds of wonderful things to allow you to run really quickly or to fight off an attacker. And most people, in medicine, we have acute diseases that, you know, medicine says, oh, well, we can treat that disease. But the effects of sympathetic dominance are actually just starting to be realized. And when people live in sympathetic dominance on a continuous basis, you know, if you're out there in the woods and you run into a bear, you want sympathetic dominance big time. You want that to function. You want that to happen, you know, fully, because it means survival. But if you really don't want to live there, but you do anyway, your physiology's in trouble. So there's a picture, you know, an out-picturing of sympathetic dominance, and here it is. There's an old man who's probably not actually old in years. He's stooped over with back pain. His head is forward. His shoulders are rounded. He's 6 inches shorter than he was in his prime. He's in a state of increased readiness to escape, as the unconscious thought process associated with sympathetic dominance leaves the muscles cramping at the slightest provocation. You know, you hear people that they're nighttime cramps and muscle cramps. This is sympathetic dominance. This old man has digestive difficulties. His breathing is shallow. Elimination is strained. In fact, it's legion, the joke about, you know, how long it takes to for a body function to happen. There's increased blood pressure. They're prone to stroke and heart failure. And it's kind of befuddled because in sympathetic dominance, higher brain functions or critical functions just aren't there. So this is the outpicturing of a life that lives in fear and protection. And when one lives there, while survival is, you know, great, if you don't need survival, the rest of the system is shut down. So the ability to thrive is compromised. Rest and sleep are difficult. Immunity doesn't work very well. Digestion doesn't work very well. You hear the number of people who are taking a blue pill for acid reflux. The liver and the spleen don't function properly. Elimination, reproduction. You hear the number of people who can't have children. That's part of sympathetic dominance. It shuts down these functions. Tissue repair doesn't happen. And as I say, those higher brain functions are compromised. So if you recognize that you've been in sympathetic dominance, you need to do something. Elsewise, you tend to outpicture that old man that I just described. So in doing this practitioner call, you know, the Avacyn Corporation does a monthly practitioner call where doctors call in and there's training around the Avacyn. So they asked if I'd do that. And so in that presentation, we looked at the fact that the Avacyn is a physical form of forgiveness. And, you know, we talk over and over again about how forgiveness is about removal. It isn't about letting somebody off the hook because of something that's moving inside of us. It's about the removing of what doesn't belong. And what the absent does is it naturally, gently uses heat infused through a heat exchanger in the palm of the hand. And when that happens, within 10 minutes of putting one's hand in the absent, all of the blood throughout the whole body, so it's a whole body treatment, all of the blood throughout the body has its temperature raised by about 0.8 degrees. And what that does is it assists the body to increase blood flow throughout the whole structure, and in particular restores restricted microcirculation, which at the same time enhances waste removal. So, you know, when you think about that balance, you don't want to be way over on the autonomic system all the time, and you don't want to be on the you don't want to be over on the parasympathetic or the sympathetic. You want to be in the middle. You want both systems in operation. And so you want to look at the functional relationship of microcirculation to the absent. So what happens is that in sympathetic dominance, there are certain organs, the ones that are related to thriving, where the activity is restricted. And that restriction happens because of the all too common fight, flight, fright, and freeze conditions that are prevalent in our overstressed society. Now, longstanding pain, fear, and or hostility simulates in the body impending danger. And that results in the body being hurled into a chronic sympathetic dominant state. So somebody who lives in fear and hostility or pain tends to be in that state that's designed for meeting a bear. If you meet a bear, you want to go there. But if you don't meet a bear, if you don't have that kind of imminent danger, you don't want that active in you. But the mind can't tell and the body can't tell the difference between a real and an imagined experience. So in this wonderful state of alert, protection is paramount, and all functions that are not urgent to survival are reduced to minimal function or shut down altogether. At least restricted. And if this state of alert protection becomes the operating norm, organ systems that are designed to enhance our ability to thrive just don't get the power supply that they need because blood flow has been starved to those systems. Capillaries are the only delivery system for fresh blood, oxygen, nutrients to our cells. And in the sympathetic dominant state, they're purposely restricted to conserve energy for the unconsciously projected need to escape or fight. So the absent is designed, there are two things. It's a class 2 medical device, and it's designed to cleared by the FDA for pain management and for relaxation. Two things that directly relate to this coming out of this sympathetic dominant state. So, and it's something that's a self-treatment. You can use it, you know, anytime. And it's comfortable. It can be engaged in anywhere. You can be sitting at your computer. My hand's in the machine right this moment as we speak. You can do it on a minute's notice as often as you want, as often as necessary. You know, pretty much every day when I am doing the radio show, since I'm sitting still for an hour, I have my hand in the absent for an hour. You know, I can do other things. Last thing in the evening, Jeannie usually does a half an hour. I usually do a half an hour last thing in the evening. And that's just kind of our norm for operating with this device. So when one's deprived of the ability to thrive by knowing living that life of dominance, that kind of for me, so many people just become natural and they don't even think about it. Every time they turn around, that fear is there. And it's thought of as being natural. And it's not natural. So just like a crystal clear river turns into a swamp where a tree blocks its flow, blood vessels and organs restricted by sympathetic dominance become crystallized and overgrown by foreign organisms, by accumulated wastes, and those wastes turn acidic. The blood vessels, as a result, become brittle, congested, and dysfunctional. You know, you think of the person canceled the thought with a stroke. What happened? Blood vessel became brittle, and it literally just cracked and broke. So what the Avacyn does is it helps the body to recover from that long-term acidic swamp effect created by shutdown of the control mechanism at the headwaters of microcirculation. And this is a really key piece to understand. Body has somewhere between, depends whose numbers you take, somewhere between 10 and 60 billion capillaries. And again, you know, an artery, an arterial, a vein, never delivered one drop of blood to a cell. Can't happen. They're not designed to do that. Those vessels are designed to bring blood to the capillary and take blood away from the capillary to return to the heart for reoxygenation, to go to the kidneys to be cleaned. So the only mechanism are these capillaries, and at least theoretically they should be continuously delivering that fresh, oxygenated, nutritionally charged blood to our trillions of cells. But the gatekeepers of this system of capillaries are called precapillary sphincters. It's sometimes called a precapillary orifice. And they're muscle fibers at each of your 60 trillion capillaries. And a capillary is a blood vessel that's about the tenth the thickness of a hair. And there's a set of muscle fibers at the head of that. Mechanism is designed for protection. When a real, or as I said before, even an imagined threat is presented, the system automatically closes off microcirculation to non-essential functions that are, and it's basically conserving energy that's needed to escape or fight. So you'll hear, and we've talked about, and this has kind of been part of my study, we've presented, you know, several times in the last few months, ways to stimulate or activate the parasympathetic nervous system. But if you stimulate and try to activate that without opening the necessary blood supply, the body's going to be frustrated its ability to move into a full and effective thrive mode. And that's what the Avacyn is designed to remedy. It remedies it by enhancing muscle relaxation and reducing the related pain. And again, they're the two functions that the device is cleared for by the FDA. So uptight is a literal description. And what the Avacyn does is it, so to speak, energetically funds microcirculation by the application of this heated blood to the tightened, closed-off muscle fibers at the capillary head. So you've literally got, you know, again, depending on whose number, somewhere between 10 and 60 billion of these capillary orifices. And they're muscle fibers. And what happens when you warm a muscle? The muscle relaxes. It softens. So when, you know, when blood leaves your hand, it takes about 3 minutes from the time it leaves your hand to go through the body and come back to your hand again. And so 10 minutes with your hand in the Avacyn and all of the blood in the body is warmed by approximately 1 degree, a little less than 1 degree. And so when you pour heat in, there's a heat exchanger in the palm of your hand. You'll notice that if you're cold, you spontaneously rub your hands together or blow in your hands. Why do you do that? Because there's a heat exchanger. There's a radiator in the palm of your hand. You may not have realized that, but that's why you blow on your hands. That's why you rub your hands together. That rubbing of the hands together creates friction, creates heat. And the heat is absorbed by that radiator and literally is distributed throughout the whole body. You'll notice if you get overheated embarrassed or what have you, and there's excess heat being produced, what happens? Your hands, your palms start to sweat. That's that radiator that's removing heat from the structure. Now, there's several ways you can get the blood temperature to rise. You can go sit in a hot bath for an hour. You do that, nice hot bath, your blood temperature is going to go up, and you're going to get a similar effect. The effect is not as pointed, however, as with the Avacyn, because when you get into a hot tub or a hot bath or you do a sauna or you go run for 2 hours, you sweat. And the heat that's generated by those activities literally goes to the moisture under the skin, and that moisture under the skin evaporates, goes to the surface of the skin, evaporates, and the evaporation cools the body. Well, one of the genius pieces of Tom Mühlbauer when he designed this was to have the temperature set so that it stays under the sweat response, so that you don't dissipate any heat by sweat response. All of the heat is dissipated when the body says, I've got too much heat in here and I have to throw it off. The heat is dissipated by the capillaries opening to the organs and the extremities to dissipate that heat rather than through sweat. And so it's a brilliant device for doing exactly that. And when you put your hand in it, and you know, as I say, you can do anything from 10, it takes about 10 minutes to get the whole body, the blood content of the body heated by just a little less than 1 degree. And that's all it takes to change everything going on within the system. So when you've got a crystal clear river that turns into a swamp when a tree blocks its flow, that's basically what happens with the blood vessels. When these capillary heads contract, the muscle fibers contract to shut down blood flow to the capillaries. So the stimulation, infusion of heat warms the blood, pours over the blood vessels soften, relax, and that control mechanism at the, we could say the headwaters of the capillaries lets loose, opens. Now you've got blood flow moving in, and that blood flow starts to clean out what it hasn't been able to clean out because of the shutdown. You know, I used the example of the log, falls over the crystal clear stream, and it's not long with it being blocked up before the stream isn't very crystal clear anymore. There's leaves and gunk and moss grows and different organisms start to live there, things that don't belong there, and all of a sudden you've got a stinky swamp. Well, that's kind of what happens at these capillary, in the capillary bed, when you're not getting the flow that you need through the capillaries. That's why all of those symptoms of the old man that I talked about happen, because the tissue repair and building, the delivery of fresh oxygen nutrition, the removal of waste isn't happening. The Avacyn basically remedies this problem by enhancing muscle relaxation, reducing the related pain. So these precapillary sphincters or orifices are opened, and you have a restoration of microcirculation. So over time, by restoring that flow of oxygen to rich nutrition and nutrition-rich blood to that deprived tissue, the resupplying of blood vessels, organs, and systems urgent to the capacity to thrive are repaired, and you end up with new levels of vitality, new levels of aliveness, new levels of energy, and all of those functions that were compromised by sympathetic dominance now are able to step up operate, and there's an enhancement in elimination, the ability to reproduce, just the whole range of things, liver function, spleen function, all of those things are improved because the flow has been opened to those organs. And it's one of the places we want to go. That balance is so important. I remember back about 30 years ago, I had a woman who was a student in New York City. She was very Italian. And in the class, we were talking about balance. And she shared a story about her father and her father's passing. And, you know, dad was sick and they knew he was going to go. He was on the verge of leaving. And she said she was sitting with him and she asked him, "Papa, what is the most important thing in life?" And, you know, and she said this rather lightheartedly considering what happened. But her father, she said he sat bolt upright and pointed up to the ceiling and in Italian said, "Palencia, Palencia," and laid back down and died right there on the spot. His last words to her were, "Palencia, balance." So looking to have balance is key. And of course, it ties right in with the forgiveness process. When you're talking about physical forgiveness, we're talking about the removal of toxic waste, crystallized acidic wastes. You know, the byproducts of metabolism generally tend to be acidic. Carbon dioxide is acidic. You'll notice when we breathe out, if you're not breathing properly, there's a buildup of carbon dioxide in your system, and that's an acidic gas. When the body becomes acidic, it's very difficult for any function to happen properly because the interstitial fluid, the fluids moving through your cellular structure are designed to be alkaline. And the core of the cell is acidic. It's designed to be acidic. And one of the things, for instance, that takes nutrition into the cell is a thing called osmotic pressure. And there's got to be a differential from the inside of the cell to the outside of the cell. So the inside of the cell is acidic. The fluid around the cell is alkaline, and that creates a pressure that draws nutrition and oxygen such into the cell. When, because of the shutdown of flow and increase in acid wastes, the interstitial fluid becomes acidic, all of a sudden that differential isn't there, and now the cell can't get what it needs. So there's just so many things that are related to it. It's one of the things that you've heard me say many times over the years, and this is the first device that I've found that you could say this about, is that anything that's truly healing, if it's got a little insert in it, the insert's going to talk about all the wonderful side effects that it has. And this is the only medical treatment that I know of that everybody that I've ever talked to, when they use it, say, "I love the side effects of this medical treatment." It's like, where else do you hear that? And it's because it's simply there supporting the structure in what it needs, where, you know, every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. You'll notice in the package of every drug, there's an insert, and the insert tells you about all the body parts that are going to break down, all the things that can go wrong, and all the deficiencies and diseases that are going to be caused. They've got us convinced that those are side effects, but they're not side effects at all. They're diseases. Truly healing substance would not produce disease symptoms. Now, that doesn't mean the body won't go into healing crisis and have symptoms of disease, but it'll be a healing process, a healing crisis, as we've talked about, rather than a disease process. So in a nutshell, that sympathetic, parasympathetic, and Jeannie had asked if I would talk about that because there were some people wanting clarification. Jeannie, does that cover the topic as you were thinking about having it covered? Any other thoughts or questions that come to mind for you?
It does cover it. And the only other thing that I thought of, and you mentioned it, but just to give a personal note, you know, I went through, when I was 16 to 19 years old, I had gotten married and was in an abusive relationship. And, I mean, he abused me every day for 3 years. And I got to the point where I stayed in that freeze mode, because I actually got to where, and in the freeze, you disassociate. It's like you leave your body so that you don't feel the full impact of what's going on for you. And if you stay in that too long, which I did, then you get to a burnout stage, and it can be challenging then to get the system booted back up and to where it's operating properly and everything. But I personally love the Avacyn. Like, I could be just like yesterday. We didn't have Aria because her mom tested positive for COVID, so she's in quarantine with her. But so it gave me the opportunity to work on my taxes. Such fun. And after just a little while working on the taxes and kind of getting in this, like, you know, stressed
sympathetic dominant mode.
Yeah, I did. I just stopped and I went and I took 30 minutes on the Avacyn. And then I think when I took my hand out, I actually looked at you and said, okay, back to tax city. But it helped to just, you know, do a reset. And, you know, we used it a lot when we had COVID back in December. And it's just phenomenal how it goes through your body, through your system, and just, I can't think of a better word, it just resets everything.
Well, and, you know, two things. Oftentimes, they'll say in a situation where there's a great deal of fear for someone, you know, well, why didn't you just do something? What are you, a coward or what have you? And an aspect, that fourth aspect of the parasympathetic dominance, literally, I mean, you see it throughout the whole creation. It isn't something that's under choice. This is the autonomic nervous system. It's automatic. No conscious thought or action is required for it to go into play. You know, the most common example, we say somebody's playing possum. What happens when fear strikes the possum? They go into freeze mode. They don't say, oh, a predator's going to get me. Let's see. I think I'll play dead. Their structure freezes. They can't move. And so it is with someone who is in that fear state. There's a certain point where the autonomic nervous system takes over and it's freeze. It was an interesting example of that. You know, we shared a while back that we've been watching the series on Netflix called Outlander, powerful. And there's a situation where a young girl gets raped and she finally tells her father about it. And she's, you know, I should have fought back. I should have fought harder. I could have beat him off. And her father's saying, well, but wait a minute. You know, if you had, you might have gotten murdered. You know, you did the best. And she's all over, all down on herself. And finally, in order to make his point, he says, okay, yeah, you're right. You should have been able to fight him off. You failed at it. You really sucked at that, you know, that kind of approach he's taking with her. And he works around to where he gets behind her, and he gets a hold of her in a way that she can't break loose. Break loose. You know, get loose to fight me off. And it was just a beautiful, powerful example of how he taught his daughter, no, sweetheart, you did the best you could do. You went into freeze mode, and it very likely saved your life. And oftentimes the person is called a coward or what have you. It happens with police. It happens with first responders. When that nervous system hits the right way, everything shuts down. It's not a choice. And so, you know, awareness is half the battle of winning. And if you want to win in your life, be aware. You know, if there are places where you said, I should have done better, could have done better, recognize that you probably were doing the best that you could do. And that was it. That was it. And forgiveness, removing the judgments about self, is a really powerful and profound thing to do in that type of situation.
And you had mentioned that, you know, whether it's a threat or a perceived threat, when someone's been in that state for so long, you know, here again, a personal example, the year that I finally got a divorce and got out of that situation, even though he was not chasing me or stalking me or trying to get me back or anything, I moved 10 times in 1 year. just out of the fear that I held of a perceived, you know, and it wasn't real, but to me it was very real.
And that, well, there's another piece of it. There's another really important thing that I've observed about the Avacyn. When I came to the conclusion, it was after several months of using this, like, this is physical forgiveness, is that the response that you're talking about there, sweetie, and, you know, when we first met, you started to work on a whole new level on that 3 years of your life and the years before that inspired you at 16 to leave home and get married in order to escape. And still, when there was a trigger that would come, you'd go into a level of upset. You know, in the early days of being together, your upset would go on for, I don't remember exactly, but extended periods of time. As you did your work, as you did your forgiveness work and such over the years, you reduced that significantly. And when that state was triggered, you would be there, but for shorter and shorter periods of time. And what I've observed is since you started to use the Avacyn, probably you've advanced in the last year and a half, probably 70% further using the Avacyn on the emotional issues and the emotional responses. The time it takes you to come back to conscious awareness is minuscule compared to what it was before you started to use the Avacyn, even though you were doing your work. So it really is a physiological thing, you know. Those when you think about that uptight state, when you think about the body going into its fear mode, what is it? It's mind energy. Where's the mind energy go? It goes. Remember we talked about the neuropeptide and the receptor site on the cell. Where does it go? It goes to the muscle fibers. That, you know, if you think about one of the examples I used in the training that I did with the medical professionals was talking about, well, just think about yourself. You're in a quiet, relaxed, sweet place, and everything's wonderful. You're breathing and having fun. And all of a sudden, there's a noise that your mind interprets as threat. What happens? And I just invite everybody to do that right now. You're in this peaceful place, and all of a sudden, there's a noise that your mind interprets as threat. Notice when you imagine it, what happens to your body. Notice your breathing changes. Your abdomen tightens. Your breath is much more shallow. And notice that even your body wants to rise up, just start as the muscles tighten. And this is, you know, we're talking about, again, somewhere between 10 billion and 60 billion capillaries, muscle fibers tighten at once. And you think about the whole body that goes into this tightened space. That means restricted blood flow to the whole thrive system of the body. People live there. I mean, it's tragic to health. It's all the diseases of our modern civilization that medicine really has no treatment for. You can't drug somebody out of it. People have to take charge of their own lives and start to do their work. And, of course, we're here to support that work. And that was the thing that attracted me to the Avacyn was the way that it, you know, Patrick McGann, you've all heard Patrick on the show at other times. He's a fellow naturopath that I've known for half a century. And he, at 74, had diabetic neuropathy in his feet. He could he'd get up in the morning prior to having the Avacyn, and he'd work for 2 hours, and he would have excruciating pain in his feet, and he'd have to go and put his feet up by the end of the day. Well, within 5 or 6 weeks of using the Avacyn, he shared, and this is what inclined me to say, I want to try this thing out. Within 5 or 6 weeks, he was at the point where he could work 5 hours a day. And he said, at the end of that 5 hours, I have an aching in my feet, but my feet aren't in excruciating pain like they used to be after 2 hours. And then y'all might remember I went to Florida about a year ago now, or it was actually a little less than a year ago, maybe 9 months ago, to do some work with a physician down there in Sarasota. And on the way back, I stopped to see Patrick, and Patrick has I had moved into a house where he had a Quonset hut, and he was building, he's a massage therapist, he was building himself a new massage therapy office in his Quonset hut. And I finished my day in Sarasota, was driving up there, and it was about 10 o'clock at night when I got there. And here's Patrick. This is the guy who less than a year earlier could stand or work for 2 hours, and he'd have to go back and put his feet up for the rest of the day in excruciating pain. This is 10 o'clock at night. He's been working on his building for 12 hours, and he's still up on a ladder and hammering and, you know, putting together his new office. That's the difference it made for him with diabetic neuropathy. They actually did a research project out of University of San Diego in California, double-blind controlled study on diabetics. And they found that it reduced blood sugar after a meal, within an hour after a meal, by 60 points. And that's about the equivalent of a brisk one-hour walk by laying back, relaxing, putting your hand in this little machine, and actually resting. Most people rest more deeply than ever. I know I had one friend who had another device, a PEMF device that they loved. And I was talking to her about, we just happened to have a conversation, and she expressed an interest when I mentioned it. And she's like, well, but I sleep really well, so I don't really need anything like that. I've got my other machine. And you know, upshot of the conversation, she wanted to try it out, so I loaned her one. And the first night that she got it, she used it before sleep. She called me in the morning and said, I'm selling my PEMF device and buying one of these. I thought I was sleeping well. And she ended up getting an Avacyn from us. So it's pretty powerful. But there's the story on the sympathetic, parasympathetic, and how this device opens and moves people back to and literally clears out the energetic patterns from the muscle fibers at the head of each of these capillaries. So it's an interesting project to look at. And we've got about 20 minutes left, a little less than 20 minutes. So if you're out there in listener land and you have a thought or a question, if you push one, I'd love to talk to you. What's on your mind?
And we do have a hand up. And before anybody says, oh, just give me a machine and then I can quit doing worksheets. No, you might want to mention that.
You still have to change your mind. There's still work to be done, yes. I have found, you know, you've heard me say it, you know, without necessarily referring to the Avacyn, that in the last year to 2 years, I've done more and deeper levels of work than I've done in my whole 50 years of developing this work. And I feel like the Avacyn has been a really important part of that for me personally. So let's go ahead and say hello to our caller.
Awesome. I believe it's Miss Celinda, area code 541. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am, it is. I really appreciated your conversation this morning about the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, because I'm going bingo right and left. However, I would also like you to reference the lymphatic system in addition to the capillary system, just from
the
parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system.
So oxygen is breathed into the lungs. They're little air sacs that absorb that oxygen, and they're connected to capillaries. And the oxygen is transferred to the blood through those capillaries into the heart, pumped out through the arteries. Arteries go down to smaller blood vessels called arterioles, then go down into the capillary bed. And then once the blood goes through the capillary, then the lymphatics are where when you've got a proper blood flow, the lymphatics are kind of like the filter system. You know, we hear about somebody, you know, as a kid, they take their lymph glands out. They take out the tonsils. Well, that's like, you know, you don't change your oil often enough in your car, and the mechanic says, well, you know, your oil filter's all stuffed up, so we're just going to bypass it. We're going to take the oil filter out. Well, how long would your car last? Not very long. you need the filter there. And so the lymphatic system is the vacuum cleaner, and lymph tissue, which are things like the, it's throughout the whole body, in the armpits, the lymphatic vessels are what bring the waste up out of. Once they've gone, it's gone through the capillary, then the waste products of metabolism, the acidic carbon dioxide by the lymph system, brought back and dumped into the body for elimination, into the eliminative channels to be removed. So that's where the lymph comes in. And you can't get lymph flow if you don't have that precapillary orifice opened and blood flowing into the capillary, because that's the source
Good.
Of lymph. It's the clean fluid.
So I had my tonsils out when I was 3 years old. I had my appendix out when I was 14. And then the doctor very sheepishly said after the appendix was out, oh, well, we think it was an acute ovulatory attack. And so I lost my appendix and I lost my tonsils. So can you explain how the tonsils are the filter for the cleansing
system? Just like
the
filter in your car.
Okay, so that's
exactly.
The tonsils.
And they become inflamed and infected when we're overloaded with organisms that don't belong in the structure. The appendix are a little different. The appendix are a little different function. The medical profession talks about the appendix as a vestige organ, meaning, well, you don't really need it. It's just there. It's kind of left over from some time. We don't know why, but, you know, it's just left over. It's not left over at all. Have you ever made sourdough bread?
Yes.
When you make sourdough bread, what do? Just before you bake the bread, what have you done?
Well,
you take a piece
of it.
Right, but you take a
piece
of the bread
and
you save it. What do you save it for?
So you can rise.
It gives bacteria to the next time you make your sourdough bread. That's exactly what the appendix is. The appendix is there designed to keep the bacteria that seeds the next round of waste to come through the colon in completing its job. When you take it out, you just got rid of the sourdough starter. That's what the appendix are for.
Okay, cool. So now I'm making popcorn connections between my tonsils being out and my appendix being out and my health issues right now at 77.
Yeah,
and
it would tie in directly.
Right. So since I don't have an appendix and I don't have tonsils,
take extra
other
care.
In relation to
what you think, what you talk, what you speak, how you act, and what you eat. Someone who doesn't have, you know, the protect mechanisms have been removed needs to be more careful, or they can more easily get into difficulty.
Right. So I've been on the right track for that. And I'm very thankful for the Aramaic Gospel because it's really causing quantum leaps in my thinking process, in my emotional states. The other question
nice.
I have to ask you since is that this is a silly question perhaps, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Since I don't have appendix, would fermented foods be good for me? And since I have endemic candidiasis that I have, I think I have it. I'm beginning to find all the thought issues behind it. Would sourdough bread, for example, be good as an adjunct to my eating program, or should I avoid it?
My take would be that your sauerkrauts and fermented foods are going to be awesome, because that's exactly what the starter is in the colon. But in terms of sourdough bread, you know, bread, the thing that feeds candida is sugar. Unless it's a really hearty whole grain bread, it's basically sugar once it gets into the body.
Right. Yeah, I only eat 100% whole spelt grain sourdough. That's it. And I don't eat it often. However,
right. Probably a good idea not to eat often.
And since I have bacterial overgrowth as well as yeast overgrowth, I suspect, I don't know this, you know, it's all an exploration. I've given up on traditional medicine or because they never gave me answers to the questions I was asking. And so I found that just going in and asking to be shown is my best way, and I still reach out for outer information as an adjunct
to
help. So I'm not sure that the yeasted products or mushrooms or the fermented foods work for me because I seem to flare up with candida symptoms.
Have you had antibiotics a lot in your life? That's pretty normal with people
who've
had antibiotics.
Yeah, when I was younger. Yeah. And vaccines, a lot of vaccines because I was a military dependent.
Right.
Which I stopped having vaccines about 40 years ago. I said, this is killing me. I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
That was my personal intuitive hit.
Yeah. So you want to stay away from every kind of sugar that you can imagine.
Yeah. I don't even eat
A little bit of stevia.
A little bit. A funny bitter taste in my mouth, and so I don't use it either. When I make my cranberry sauce, Michael and Jeannie, it's pure cranberry sauce, raw cranberry sauce, zero zilch health. And it's not exactly a hit at Thanksgiving parties, let me tell you. But it works for me.
Yeah.
But I
well,
want
to
fruit juice. You want to stay away from fruit juice?
I was just going to say, throw in, what about putting blueberries in the cranberries?
Blueberries have too much sugar for me. If I eat blueberries, I can eat blackberries. Raspberries are too sweet for me. I don't do any dates. I don't do any dried fruits, nothing. And that's pretty much what's kept me vertical.
Or you get a candida flare-up.
Oh, yeah. That's the beginning of it, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
so you stay
and,
away from juices too then?
Oh, yeah, and there are certain fruits I don't eat either because they're just a sugar hit. Apples work really well for me, cranberries, blackberries, the tartar fruits sort of thing. But anyway, I wanted to make the connection with the lymphatic system. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And also... you know, my stinking thinking is primary. It can get me in trouble all the time. And not moving. I tend to be a couch potato. And so for me, it takes a great deal of psychological effort to, and I also tend to deny myself, as you and Jeannie probably remember from my honors, that my honor for self was way down. And so, and I had one more thing, if you have enough time, I have one more quick aha.
You. Before you go to the aha, the other thing is that I'd suggest you utilize your volition in order to move, because where there is restricted circulation, movement enhances circulation.
Right. And then with my lockdown
lymphatic
breath,
and everything else.
With me. Yeah. Right. And then the breath.
Yeah.
Right. Because you shared my lockdown breath for me. Okay. The quick aha was all of my life I have had a crucial dysfunction in depth awareness. It wasn't depth perception. It was depth awareness. I never could, and I can't even today at this moment, I haven't been able to until this aha to even entertain the possibility that I could have depth awareness. And I realized that all my life I've felt invaded, that there was no space for me to be. And I went, aha, no space for me to be. So what am I going to do? I am going to not make space for me. And I just wanted to share that with you. So I'm doing worksheets on it.
Good catch.
Yeah, I went, oh, it's not the awareness's fault or the lack of it. I created that for myself. So anyway, I'm playing with that one. I'll let you know if anything changes.
Hey, nice work. That's awesome.
I
but
thought
move.
So. I was pretty proud
activity
of myself.
For that circulation.
That's it. That's it. And there ain't anyone on this planet that is going to make that space for me but me.
Yep. You got it.
Thank you, Jeannie and Michael.
And
love you both.
We're here to support,
oh,
and we're here to support it.
And did you ever get Aria's little Easter gift?
We did, yes.
We did.
That butterfly was awesome.
You had that wrapped up so protectively.
Oh, the little
But we have not... The little rabbits.
Yeah.
But we have not had her since we got it, though. She's in quarantine with her mom right now.
Yeah, that's what I understood. And it's so slow with the mail at Easter and Christmas. So, yeah. But I bought that plate. I absolutely adored it. But it had the little grooves in it. And so I was afraid to use it because it's food or stuff would get stuck in there. And then I thought, Aria, this is for Aria.
That's the cutest plate.
It is very cute.
I almost needed a hammer and chisel to get the package open, though. It was so taped on top of tape on top of tape on top of tape.
That's my mommy's fault, ha ha. She taught me how to wrap packages before tape was ever available. It was like one of those nets that the military recruits have to climb up. Is what her package would look like when she finished.
Cool.
My package is gift there. So, and besides, it was all recycled, Jeannie.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Thank you.
So it is cute. It's sitting right on the table waiting for her to get here to see it. But as we say, we got cut out yesterday.
She called us on FaceTime, and she was like, I want to come to Nene and Pebbles. And tears were running down her face, and it was like, oh, sweetie. But
yeah.
Anyway, it'll be here when she gets here.
Sweet.
And thank you.
Well,
thank you for thinking of her so often.
Right. And I'll send you a picture because we're under about 4 inches of snow right now.
Oh, no. We just uncovered our garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're
and
looking
so,
like we've probably had our last freeze. So we're just, I just sowed a cover crop yesterday and waiting for it. It's supposed to rain. And if it doesn't rain, I'm going to have to go out and water it again. We just got some buckwheat crop in and covered it with grass and chopped leaves. So we're rocking, and our first two potato plants are up already.
Well, I could be envious, but I think I'm. But I'm going to bless your garden instead. How about that?
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, we actually planted our potatoes the 1st of February.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Well, I know it's getting to the end of your show, but I just wanted to share those questions and thoughts with you and tell you how much I'm trying to listen when I can, but my time is getting more constricted now because of the warming weather. So I keep thinking of you all, and I keep you in my
thoughts
and prayers.
All right. Lots of love.
My multiple
hearts. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
And in closing, just remind everybody that in an hour and a half, we have the book club.
Yes. Come and play. The link's on the website, whyagain.org. Go to activity or events and come join us for the book study. Blessings. Have the best year yet of your eternal life.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.